WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Illinois voters weighed in on three non-binding referendums this election cycle, and all of them passed. 9 out of 10 voters said yes to more protections for election workers. More than 7 out of 10 supported reproductive health coverage, and 6 out of 10 voted for the so-called millionaire's tax. I should mention that some votes are still being tallied. In a few minutes, a health economist explains what the results mean for in vitro fertilization, or IVF, in Illinois. We'll start with former Democratic Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. He's an advocate for the proposal to raise taxes on income higher than $1 million. Here's our conversation. Let me give folks the exact question that they saw on the ballots. It said, should the Illinois Constitution be amended to create an additional 3% tax on income greater than $1 million for the purpose of dedicating funds raised to property tax relief? So break it down for us. What's the goal, Governor?
Illinois has the second highest property taxes in the country. Only New Jersey is higher, and I don't think we aspire to be New Jersey. You know, we want to reduce property taxes because it's not based on ability to pay. Too often people who are in homes that they're trying to stay in are getting taxed out of those homes by ever-rising property taxes here in Chicago as well as the suburbs and definitely downstate. And the best way to reform the system is to take a look at the unfairness. Right now, the Illinois gives a lot of tax breaks to millionaires and loopholes and so on, and higher property tax bills to everyday people. And yeah, this referendum was specifying a specific way that you can raise money to give property tax rebates every year to the homeowners of our state. There's 3 million homeowners across Illinois, those households, and there's 77,323 millionaires. The millionaires are doing pretty well, and this referendum, a surcharge, would provide $4.5 billion for property tax relief. And Massachusetts actually did something like this 2 years ago. It passed, and it's now the law there, and we hope to do the same thing in Illinois.
Yeah. So walk me through a bit more of what you think are the problems with our state's current income tax system. So to your point a moment ago, I mean, you talk about how our state gives tax breaks to millionaires, then turns around and gives higher property taxes to everyday folks.
Right. Well, in Illinois, actually, millionaires are taxed lower than millionaires in about 26 other states that have the income tax. They pay 4.95% of their income. That's what everybody else pays. But that really, we should, in my opinion, have a surcharge on millionaire income. The first million, same rate as everybody else. But if you're making multi-millions of dollars, you should have to pay a little higher income tax, 3% surcharge, and use that money for a fundamental purpose. Illinois' tax code is considered one of the most unfair in the country. It over relies on property taxes to fund schools and other things. And the best way to kind of even things out is to use a rebate. There's already a law in Illinois called the Property Tax Relief Trust Fund. The problem is they've never appropriated any money to the trust fund. But the law says that every year, people who declare the homestead exemption, that's over 3 million households in Illinois, would get a annual property tax refund or rebate put on their bill.
Right.
So this is a very straightforward, efficient way to give relief to the people who need it the most, folks who live from paycheck to paycheck.
Well, you talked about how much it benefits homeowners here in Illinois. What about renters? Do you see this sort of idea benefiting them?
Well, you know, I was with Hattie Kanazi, who I grew up, I was born in South Shore, and she lives in South Shore, a neighborhood in Chicago. She has a three flat, and she lives in one unit. She'd be eligible for the homestead exemption. She has two other units that she rents out. Well, when her property tax bill arrived this year, it went from $2,200 to $6,500. Well, she's 76 years old, lives on fixed income.
That's a big
She
jump.
Can't afford it. And, you know, so that's why a property tax rebate every year going to women like Hattie will help hold down rents, prevent rent increases for lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
So we really need to, in Illinois, have a continued debate. I'm going to go down to Springfield, I think, next week and talk to legislators and other officials that this has to be a constitutional amendment on the ballot at the next election that's a binding referendum. Have a full-scale debate across our state. In the past, I've been involved in passing constitutional amendments. 1980, we passed a referendum called the Cutback Amendment that reformed the legislature. And then when I was governor, I got sworn into office. When I was governor, there were two former governors, George Ryan and Rob Blagojevich, in jail at the same time.
Yeah.
And I proposed a recall amendment for our state. And that passed in 2010 by a huge margin. And I think we can pass the property tax relief
amendment. Here's an opportunity to revisit that.
For the future, yeah.
So we got to talk about the fact that people across the state, they actually voted against Governor J.B. Pritzker's graduated income tax. This was back in 2020. Mm-hmm. I'm curious why people voted against that, but they voted for this.
Well, I think it was too complicated. It didn't earmark money for tax relief specifically in the proposal people voted on. And then I think we should have the constitutional amendment say right in the Constitution, $1 million. If you make, if you're lucky enough to get $1 million net income in a particular year, you're going to pay a surcharge of 3%. That wasn't in the amendment that was proposed 4 years ago. My experience passing referendums, and I've done quite a few, is you got to be specific, clear, understandable, not complicated, and earmark the money for something that people want to have happen, property tax relief. We did this with the Citizen Utility Board 40 years ago. Illinois has very high utility rates. The utility companies never wanted a consumer group called Citizen Utility Board, but we put it on the ballot as an advisory question around the state, passed everywhere, and it was very clear. People understood we're going to have a consumer group to take on these ComEd and People's Gas and the I-Corps and AT&T, and it passed, and it's now the law for 40 years, and it's Illinois' largest consumer group.
Yeah. So President-elect Trump also has several ideas around taxes, including extending his 2017 tax cuts, which, you know, some say largely benefit the wealthy. He's also proposed exempting tips, Social Security, and overtime from being taxed. He's floated the idea of eliminating the federal income tax altogether. He claims that increasing tariffs on imported goods, that's going to make up for the lost revenue from income taxes. Quick thoughts on those plans?
Well, I'm against the tariff idea that he's proposing. I feel that if he gives more tax breaks to the wealthiest, the richest among us, that's another argument for Illinois having a 3% surcharge on millionaire income in order to provide real tax relief where it's needed the most. We want to encourage home ownership in Illinois in every neighborhood. Whether you live in the city or the suburbs or downstate, homeowners are anchors in that neighborhood, but they can't be faced with a punitive property tax burden. For years and years, this has been talked about in Illinois, but this referendum that was on the ballot on Tuesday that got 60% of the people voting yes is the first time folks had a chance to vote for a specific measure that earmarks money for property tax relief. So I think in our state, we're best off doing that.
Yeah.
In Washington, we're going to have a big battle, obviously, on a lot of issues, including tax relief and tax reform.
Right. And so, as we said earlier, clear, this is a non-binding referendum. So even though voters supported it overwhelmingly, I mean, it won't go into effect. Now, talk about the benefits then of us all weighing in on this now and what could happen next. I think you mentioned earlier you're going to Springfield soon to try to push this further.
Well, that's the same thing as I mentioned a moment ago about Citizen Utility Board. Yeah. That was an advisory referendum, and within a short period of time, that when people voted yes for the referendum, we got it into law. We got to do the same thing with the property tax relief amendment. Politicians follow the election returns. They look at the language of votes on the ballot box, from the ballot box. And I know I was a politician. I was the governor of Illinois. I was lieutenant governor. Before that, I was state treasurer. And I think when I go to Springfield, I want to talk to legislators of both parties. If we're going to do something specific about real tax relief that helps everyday people, this is the way to go. Okay. A surtax on millionaire income, use that money to help people who are suffering from high property taxes. I think we can get that on the ballot. It's all about organizing.
Yeah.
Early to bed, early to rise, work like hell and organize. That's what that's my credo. That's what I believe in. And that's what we're going to do.
That's former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. Governor, thank you so much for making the time.
Good to see you.
We'll turn now to another question that Illinois voters supported, and that's around health insurance coverage for in vitro fertilization, or IVF. Now, according to the latest results, just over 72% of people voted in support of the measure. With us now to discuss is Lindsay Allen, who's a health economist, Medicaid researcher, and assistant professor of emergency medicine at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Hey, professor, how you doing?
Hello, Sasha.
So the question here was, should all medically appropriate assisted reproductive treatments, including but not limited to IVF, be covered by any health insurance plan in Illinois that provides coverage for pregnancy benefits without limitation on the number of treatments? Explain what this means, Professor Allen, and the goal here.
Sure, absolutely. So this advisory question, like the governor was mentioning earlier, is trying to take the temperature of Illinoisans and see, you know, kind of against this national backdrop of reproductive justice that we're talking about now, where do Illinoisans stand on protecting the right to reproductive care in the state?
Yeah. So how does coverage of IVF work in Illinois right now?
Yeah, so coverage depends largely on who your insurer is. So if you are getting your insurance through through your employer, for example, it's a large employer, over 25 employees, then you are likely going to have your IVF covered, because that's one of the provisions that we have in Illinois law. We are leading the country in terms of maintaining protections for those who want to start families. But if you are a Medicaid enrollee, or if you have a small group insurance plan, or if you're an individual plan owner, you are not going to have those same protections.
Mm-hmm. And I emphasize the last part of the question there, you know, without limitation on the number of treatments. I did that for a reason. Well, tell us, why unlimited treatment?
Yes, you caught that, huh? They really tacked that on at the end there, didn't they?
Did.
So unlimited treatment is important because one size does not fit all when it comes to reproductive health and when it comes to starting a family. So we have a lot of Illinois residents who have medically complex conditions or genetic conditions, or they're older in age, that make it so that, you know, four rounds might not be enough for them to start the family that they're dreaming of. But on the other hand, it usually does not take, you know, more than two or three rounds for someone to have a successful pregnancy. So
yes.
I think unlimited, while the number seems infinite, you know, we're opening up to infinite care, it's really just trying to make sure that we are including everyone who wants to start a family in these new protections.
And including other treatments, right? What mm-hmm. other reproductive treatments does this cover aside from in vitro fertilization?
Yeah, so the IVF really got its own shout out there, and that's probably what people are most familiar with. But this will cover things like, you know, embryo retrieval, and it'll cover things like artificial insemination and ovulation enhancement, and a lot of the accompanying treatments that families can use to in the journey. It's not like your options are IVF or nothing. There's
yeah.
a lot that you can do to start your family ahead of moving to IVF.
But speaking of IVF, you're right. There is a huge push, mm-hmm. especially by Illinois lawmakers, to expand access to IVF. I'm thinking of Senator Tammy Duckworth, that Right to IVF Act, for instance, right? Talk more about why we're seeing such a focus on that particular treatment.
Sure. So I think when we're talking about Senator Duckworth in particular, she has personal experience with IVF. She's been very open about her IVF journey and how it was really important to her family's creation, you know, as when she returned from her war duties. And with her kind of leading the charge here, that is one of the reasons we are seeing that push here in Illinois. But I think also, I think when we're talking about this national conversation on reproductive health care and what our right is to it, I think we tend to focus on the abortion side of things, the birth control side of things, but we rarely think of the other side of that coin, mm-hmm. which is the right to grow a family. And so we're seeing this push to protect all of the rights, every aspect of reproductive health care in Illinois. And I believe
whatever
that's why we're seeing it out.
For yes. your family.
Exactly. Whatever works for you.
Yes. And we should mention private insurance can cover IVF, but what about people who don't have that and they're maybe on Medicaid?
So, right. So this is an issue that's close to my heart because I do Medicaid research. And so there are no states that fully cover IVF through Medicaid in the United States. We get closer in Illinois than a lot of other states, but it means that we have this kind of two-tiered system of individuals who we, you know, kind of are implicitly deeming worthy of growing a family, and then people who were saying, hey, you are lower income and we're not going to cover this for you. Mm. So there becomes this large ethical, moral dilemma of who are we to say that only those who are not on Medicaid are allowed to grow their family. But I think the flip side of that is that it comes down to resource allocation. So mm-hmm. money is scarce, resources are scarce, and Medicaid agencies like, you know, ours in Illinois are constantly trying to balance the need for cost control. And, yeah. you know, they have a limited budget while also making sure they're offering equitable care for those that need it.
You said something to our producer before this conversation mm-hmm. that was interesting to me. You said on this point, how ethical is it that we can't help people have a family simply because they're poor?
I know. It's really this, the two-tier system. When you think about, we have individuals in Illinois, so we've got, I don't know, 95% of IVF births in Illinois were covered by private insurance. And then we have this small share that is focused on, or that was covered by self-pay, you know, so this is a very expensive treatment. And then we have a very small percent that were covered by Medicaid. And so that self-pay group is what I want to focus on, because we're saying that, you know, if you are in a higher income tier, not only are you more likely to be able to have your insurance pay for this, but you're also more likely to be able to pay cash, so to speak, for
yes.
this. So in terms of the ethics, I think it constantly goes back to who gets to deem which parts of someone's healthcare are worthy of being paid for.
Let's listen to President-elect Donald Trump.
We really are the party for IVF. We want fertilization, and it's all the way. Oh, I want to talk about IVF. I'm the father of IVF, so I want to hear this question.
So nationally, there's already been such a strong effort to expand access, and it's been getting blocked by Senate Republicans, including back in September. President-elect Trump says the Republican Party is the party for IVF, though. And as you just heard, he said he's the father of IVF. What do you make of that?
So regardless of what President-elect Trump might say, we have to go with what we've actually seen happen in practice. And so we do have a lot of conservative groups who are saying that we should not be allowing IVF, because IVF, as you probably know, involves fertilizing embryos outside right. of the uterus, and then you put them in the uterus. And so as we saw with the case in Alabama recently, there are some vocal detractors of IVF who believe that you are kind of discarding these unborn children when you're not implanting these fertilized embryos. And so regardless of what policymakers might say, I encourage your listeners to really think about what's happening on the ground and mm-hmm. what are we seeing in real life.
Before I let you go, Professor Allen, I mean, according to the latest results, 7 in 10 voters decided yes, for this referendum, right? We really only saw no votes in counties in southern Illinois. So again, this is non-binding, right? What do you think is next here? And what would it take to actually make this happen? Because clearly, this is what voters want.
It is. Illinois voters have signaled loud and clear that we want to protect our reproductive rights, whatever that might look like. And so I think to echo the governor, this means we're headed down to Springfield. And so it's up to the lawmakers to decide how they want to operationalize this into policy that then will be binding.
We'll leave it there. That's Lindsay Allen, who's a Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yason, edited by Dan Tucker, and mixed by Micah. She's been busy. For more coverage of the 2024 election, just scroll back in our podcast feed and keep an eye out for upcoming episodes on Cook County judges, funding for forest preserves, and more. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.